Welcome back to Radicalize Me, the show that is now making the transition from pragmatic association with the Biden-Harris team to taking the form of a giant middle finger to those crony capitalist pigs. You know, in the old cartoons where like a flock of geese or like a school of fish will collectively take different shapes. All the little fish join up to look like one big fish. Picture that. But it's all of us turning into a middle fucking finger. If you're new to my show, let me tell you a little about our mission here. Or even if you're a returning listener, let's regroup. This is a podcast about leftist activism, the people who do it, and how you can too. If you're already converted to my kind of libertarian anarcho-socialism, stick around to strategize. If not, you're welcome here too. I encourage all types to listen, learn, criticize, and join the conversation, which you can do by emailing me at radicalizeme@gmail.com or by sending me a voice message at anchor.fm/radicalizeme. My hope is that as you listen, you will see why the policies I advocate for would be beneficial to all, and why the most important thing we can do is direct action. If you are a liberal, a centrist, a diehard normie Democrat, or some other variation thereof, I offer you peace. I will always do my best, especially from this point on, not to use my show as a platform to offend and demean you. I'm not going to lie, I have done so plenty of times in the past. I can be an asshole sometimes, and I can't promise to be perfect, but I'm working on it. I was a liberal for a very long time, and I understand where you're coming from. We probably agree on several things, but I think there's a bit of a rift when it comes to capitalism v. socialism. And that's okay. We'll work on it. I just ask you to hear me out. If you are a conservative, a Republican, or a libertarian of some form or another, we might have a little bit more of a divide to overcome. So let's get started. I said a minute ago that I consider myself a libertarian socialist, and I know you're laughing at me right now, but y'all stole the L word from us long ago, so I'm sorry, but we're taking it back. Libertarianism is rooted in leftist ideology, and I hope to assist in breaking you free from the corporatist baggage placed upon this beautiful philosophy by shitheel billionaires who don't give a fuck about you. If you're a Trump supporter, we'll talk. I encourage you to listen, too. Even if you're a white supremacist or a neo-Nazi or something, I'm certainly not okay with what you believe, and I'm sure you'd say the same to me. But my goal is still to improve your life and to hopefully change your mind and bring you over to the side of the glorious anarchist future. This show started as an exploration of leftist activism and a living guidebook of how to do it. And it still is this way and will remain so. But as projects like this do, it's taking on other roles as well, including this discussion of ideology and a method of outreach. Today's episode is certainly about activism, but more in the medical, mental health realm. My guest is Bethany Killen. She is a Toronto-based social worker and runs the Dissociative Society of Canada nonprofit. As the name suggests, they are trying to provide services to folks with dissociative disorders. Bethany herself has one of these disorders, and you'll hear us talk about her personalities, or her system, is the better word for it, and her plans for the organization. You can also, of course, donate at the link in the description. And that's it for now. Let's get to the interview. All right. So, yeah, let me just ask you a couple of questions so I can test my audio.
No worries.
So you're in, are you in Canada or are you just from Canada?
No, I'm in Toronto.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that. I don't know. Sometimes I see someone's from Canada and I assume they're there, but they live in LA or something, you know. No, it's a lot of interplay between our countries, right?
Yeah, I've met a lot of systems from Canada that live overseas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's easier for them to get help overseas than it is in Canada currently, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a privilege thing. So yeah, it just leaves the rest of us who can't afford to go overseas.
Right.
stranded.
So what are some of the limitations?
Oh, where to begin? So a lot of supports in therapy specifically are in private practice.
Okay.
So, and it's quite
Yeah.
cost prohibitive to do so. Like, I've seen a psychiatrist charge $400 an hour. And right now, with the pandemic, people are underemployed or not employed at all. No one
Yeah.
can really afford to have those supports therapeutically. And not to mention, there are institutions like CAMH that don't have the education to talk about dissociative disorders or even
Okay.
DID.
What, sorry, what was that organization you just mentioned?
Oh, CAMH, the Canadian Association for Mental Health.
Okay. And so and they're so they just like don't have the research hasn't been done or like they're just
There's
not trained.
enough research to
Yeah.
get somebody a head start on it. It's just with CAMH, they're the only public psychiatric emergency room in Ontario. So they deal with a whole spectrum of mental health and mental health crisis. But I've had a lot of people in my own experiences with CAMH, not only in Ontario, but other provinces as well, where they've sought out help and no one seems to know what dissociative disorders are.
Right. Yeah, and so even in I think I shouted you guys out last week in a tweet, and I had a misconception in there too because I mentioned DID, and you mentioned like a bunch of other dissociative disorders that I didn't even
Yeah,
know.
so there's technically five dissociative disorders that are recognized by the DSM in the UN. So they're all severe, let's put it that way. But in terms of the dissociative spectrum, it goes like depersonalization, which is you don't recognize yourself. So if you look in the mirror and you don't immediately recognize yourself, you could be having a depersonalization episode. Derealization is another one where you just don't recognize the environment that you're in. So a lot of people who are in an active derealization episode may go to the grocery store and struggle because the fluorescent lighting is actually making the fruits and vegetables look even more fake.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intense. And then there's dissociative amnesia, which is really, really hard to diagnose because a lot of people just chalk up their forgetfulness to just basic forgetfulness, just, being forgetful or just having a really shitty memory. But really, it could be three different things. It could be localized, so you don't immediately recognize your name or don't remember your name, like important details like that. And then there's other types of dissociative amnesia where you just don't remember the trauma that you were in. And then it progresses to otherwise specified dissociative disorder 1A and 1B. And they are systems, but they don't meet the criteria for DID. So
Okay.
1A, well, in both, you have system members that are there, but they're not wholly separate like you find in DID. And they don't have the amnesia barriers that is really common with DID. So
Okay.
with OSDD 1B, you're more together, and I usually get this backwards, so forgive me,
Okay.
listeners, but they're more together, they're less separate, but there is an awareness. And with 1A, they're a little bit more separate, but they don't meet the diagnostic criteria of DID. And with DID, it's considered the most severe form of dissociation. And that has like the dissociative amnesia. You can have episodes of derealization, depersonalization, and you obviously have system members or alters, as we call them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you said something about awareness. Is that like awareness that you are dissociating? Is that what you mean by
A lot of
awareness?
people aren't aware,
Yeah.
especially as children, right? So a lot of these disorders happen as a result of like severe, overwhelming childhood trauma. And that can range from systemic racism, which we see a lot of with Indigenous and more marginalized populations, and to like childhood sexual abuse. It could be environmental disasters. So like if you were a person, a child during Katrina, for example, there's a greater risk of a dissociative disorder. And we're actually seeing an increased risk of dissociative disorders with the kids that are currently locked up at the border in the United States.
Yeah, I'm sure that nothing good is happening to them for sure.
No. Some people become aware of their system members, but generally, the feeling is that it's very covert. So I could switch right now and you would have no idea.
Okay.
But there are systems out there that are very overt. They introduce themselves. So if I were an overt system, and if my system member Heinrich, for example, comes out and he'd be like, "Hi, I'm Heinrich. Nice to meet you." And like glasses come off and everything because he has perfect vision.
Right. Okay.
So it really depends, but a lot of people don't have an awareness until the alters either make themselves aware or the host or the primary person notices things and starts putting things together. For me, I had no idea until I put up a security camera in my apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then my 21-year-old alter Heinrich took a baseball bat to it. So
Wow.
that was how I found out. That was actually how I ended up getting diagnosed in
Yeah.
2013.
So did you like you did you suspect that like something was up and you weren't
I
sure
honestly
what,
thought
or
I had
like,
schizophrenia.
okay.
I honestly thought, and like there's a lot of not correlation, but there's a lot of similarities. It's the hearing voices part
Right.
that a lot of people just automatically assume schizophrenia, especially if you go to a doctor and you're like, "I'm hearing voices and they're telling me to do stuff, good, bad, or ugly." The immediate perception is schizophrenia or psychosis.
Right.
So when you get tested for schizophrenia or psychosis and you don't meet that threshold, they don't immediately assume a dissociative disorder because it's so understudied and so under known. Like it's just not known at all. And I'm constantly having to explain these things like daily
Yeah.
in my academic life.
That's wild. I mean, so like, well, yeah, I have so many questions about this, but for yeah,
Go ahead.
I want to better understand like the idea of being a system or having a system, like
Yeah, no, that's actually quite easy. So think of yourself as a puzzle. So
okay.
you have all these pieces that work together to make up one functioning human being, right? But here's the thing. Every single piece has been isolated at some point in their lives, especially if you have DID. Not so much with OSDD, but you do see it. They become isolated, they develop into their own person, and that person in that identity still has a lot to offer to the table, and you're just all coming together as one to function as a whole.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, 'cause I mean, probably anyone could say they have different parts of their personality, but I
Yeah,
imagine this is
so
like a
it's not the
much
same
more.
as being multifaceted.
No,
It's not.
yeah.
It's not at all. So the current theory that's widely accepted about why this happens is called structural dissociation. And the theory is that between the ages of 2 and 9, sometimes younger, everyone is born with multiple selves, but through normal, healthy development, those selves unificate and you become one functioning personality or identity.
Okay.
When you have childhood trauma or something else happens, that unification gets disrupted. And so these amnesic barriers go up in between those traits. So
Okay.
here's me, Bethany, age whatever, functioning, doing well, completely unaware of like three other alters that have now formed out of
Right.
necessity from other things. So as a result, I have myself, then I have Zach, who is the only alter that ages with me. She's 31. She's going to be 32 in December. Then I have Heinrich. Then I have Shoshana. Then I have Alice and Rue. And all together, we work together to make for me to be able to function throughout society,
Right.
basically.
Okay.
Without them, I don't think I would have made it to 31. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, okay. So is it anything related, like what around what age does that sort of unification process usually happen? Because I'm wondering if
It
it's
depends on a variety of factors, right? If you're from an affluent background, obviously that unification is going to happen much quicker. But usually between the ages of 6 and 9, you start seeing that unification of personality if you have a healthy, normal childhood.
I mean that's interesting because it does seem like it's something that little kids will say that
Which
like
is
now I'm someone else. I'm.
why you see a lot of little kids. It's like, oh, they have so many multiple personalities. And it's true. They're trying to figure out who they are, what they like, what traits they do like. And then if they don't like them, they reject them. Which is why you see kids have these tantrums all the time because they're just confused and they don't know how to verbalize that. And most of, well, nobody has the vocabulary to really identify what is going on. But as the current theory that is widely accepted, this is what happens. Now, there are many theories as to why, but this is the one that researchers think makes the most sense and is widely accepted across most psychology fields.
I mean that makes a lot of sense. I think with any mental health condition, people like just go right to like, oh, so like your brain's broken, like something's wrong with you. Like, well,
No, it's just our brains develop this really interesting way to protect itself. That's all it is. It's no different from people that have schizophrenia or psychosis as a result of trauma. It's just the way of the brain, it's protecting itself. Now, with that said, we don't understand a tenth of why the brain does what it does. Like, the brain is just this big old mystery that we're just trying to crack. So as research develops, right now you're seeing a lot of functioning MRI studies come out about DID, which is really interesting to watch. If you ever get your hands on the video, you actually see the brain behave differently between all the alters and system members. And it's really cool to watch. They actually recently did one on me, and it explained why I couldn't hear with one of my alters because one of my alters is technically deaf, but I'm hearing. And
I was.
in like the visual changes because three of my alters have perfect vision. My vision is shit. So, like, these things are very rare. They don't happen often, but they do happen. And in science, it's just hell bent on trying to figure it out to make sense of it.
That was going to be one of my next questions is can you see better as Heinrich?
That's actually how I know that one of my alters is gonna come up. My vision starts changing. Like right now I can see perfectly, but even without my glasses on, like it's a little fuzzy, but I can still see. Like I can still make out things. But as soon as it starts to get fuzzy with my glasses on, I'm like, okay, I'm switching. Something's coming up. And my voice changes with Heinrich when he comes out because it goes deeper. How I speak with Zach, for example, changes if I know she's gonna come out. I start age regressing with my minor alters, so Shoshana and Alice. And the only alter that I have co-conscious with, which I'll explain in a second, is with Rue. And that is always a very alarming experience for me. My hearing goes out, which I'm very dependent on. My hearing goes out. It starts to feel like I'm having a depersonalization episode because I feel like I'm looking through my body's eyeballs through someone else, but it's my body, but it feels like I'm wearing a costume. Yeah, it's an alarming experience. I have ex explained it and described it to so many people, and they're just like, that sounds terrifying. I'm like, this is my daily
Is
life,
it yeah.
so.
Is there any like getting used to it, or is it still just like really kind of
It was really alarming in the beginning, because I go to York University right now. So I was on campus one day in the before times when, you could go to school. And I was just walking through the halls and I got very confused. I didn't recognize where I was. And then suddenly something just went. And I felt like I was just wearing this really fleshy costume. and just there was this awareness that I was no longer grounded. It's kind of like how people with dissociation and PTSD, they describe really out of body experiences, but I wasn't looking at my body from the outside. I was in it, but I wasn't attached to it.
Right.
It was really bizarre. And the way we describe that is called co-consciousness. So you just, the metaphor is that the body is a car. And one right now I'm driving that car. So I'm in the front seat driving and we're talking, no big deal. But when Rue comes in, I'm either in the back seat where I have some awareness that something is going on, or I'm in the passenger seat where I'm fully aware of what's going on, but I'm no longer in control.
Right.
And
Okay.
with my other alters, I'm just in the trunk. Like I have total
Yeah.
amnesia. I have no idea what is happening.
Wow. Yeah, so when it comes to I'm not even sure where to go first. This is
It's
like
okay.
really
It's
fascinating.
overwhelming.
Like when it comes to like the okay, so like the vision thing for one.
Yeah.
Is there when they can look and see like a change in the brain and you're at like vision is actually improving with a personality shift. Is there any avenue there to like learn more about like visual impairedness and like to correct it?
Absolutely. It definitely opens up our understanding of like how the body works,
Yeah.
really. There was an article that came out in 2019, and it was translated from German, if I remember correctly. And they said, oh, the people with DID could really like bust the myth about what the brain is fully capable of doing. Because we
Okay.
only recently learned that when trauma happens, our brain creates new neural pathways to somehow navigate that damage, right?
Right.
So I think people that are systems in general, whether you're disordered or not, we've created new neural pathways to deal with everyday life.
Right. Yeah, that's it's really interesting 'cause yeah, I still have some of it, but I overcame a lot of chronic pain issues with this sort of psychological approach. There's a few different ones, but the one I started with was an app called Curable. Yeah, it's 'cause a lot of it does go back to like, well, whatever chronic thing this is can be very much related to trauma and to uncovering that stuff and facing it down, I guess. Yeah, it just sounds similar in the way that it's like, yeah, the brain does like crazy stuff like that.
The brain controls
Yeah.
everything. I've had a lot of people say the movie Inside Out has helped them conceptualize what a lot of systems go through.
Okay.
And it's not the same, but like people with borderline personality disorder, similar thing. So a lot of systems use the metaphor of Inside Out to really conceptualize to people that are singlets like yourself. To just understand the enormity of, I'm just gonna say, weirdness that we deal with. Like, for me, it's totally normal. Like, I don't understand singlets at all. Like, you have one personality, one identity. What does that
Yeah,
even mean?
it's super boring.
Whereas I have to think about five other people at all times.
Yeah.
So, recently, my family went through a loss. My grandfather passed away from
I'm sorry.
complications of a stroke on September 11th. And he was very, very accepting of my system and actually referred to, would always ask when I spoke to him, like, oh, how's Heinrich? How's Shoshana?
Oh,
How's
wow.
whoever, right?
Yeah.
So when he passed away, there was a lot of pain, obviously. And, but it was like six times because I was feeling it through six different people, myself plus my alters. And to this day, like, I think I've more or less accepted it. There's nothing I can do about it. He had complications resulting of a stroke. It happens. It sucks, but it
Right.
happens. Like the man was 80. And whereas my 10-year-old Shoshana doesn't understand it because she's at that age where death is really, really hard to conceptualize at that age, right? even though she lives in a body of a 31-year-old woman. She still
Right.
thinks as a child, and she is a child. So
Yeah.
she can't consent to a lot of things.
Wow. So I was curious, in addition to personality traits and whatever else, vision and hearing differences. Because you mentioned like looking at the fruit in the grocery store and it seems to like not look real. Is that a like a whole separate thing that associated
That's
with this?
derealization disorder.
Okay.
So the DSM categorizes depersonalization, derealization as the same, but they're actually very different, and they should be treated as separately, and they should have their own pages in the DSM. But
Yeah.
currently, it's not. It's known as depersonalization, derealization disorder. Derealization is just you don't recognize the environment you're in. So a lot of people really identify with aliens for some reason,
Okay.
as a way to conceptualize what they're going through. So like fluorescent lighting can actually make the environment look more fake.
Oh, okay.
So I've been in situations where I've actually had to help people with derealization through like a weird sense of exposure therapy. Like I'm just walking through the grocery store with them, just helping them do daily tasks. And right now, as we're seeing with the pandemic, a lot of people with derealization aren't recognizing the world outside their homes.
Right, okay.
And it makes it
Yeah.
worse. Whereas on the flip side, we are seeing a lot of people with dissociative disorders in general doing absolutely fine with the pandemic because they've already lived through so much worse.
Right.
So, or their environment has barely changed. And but we are seeing a variety of impact just by the pandemic itself. And a lot of it is bad, but there is some good there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. A friend of mine who I also had on the show, also named Beth, was saying that the pandemic and also she got really involved with like the protests that started, back in May. And she was saying how both of those things are somewhat I don't know if easier, but easier to like take in stride for her because she had a complete reality shift in getting sober. So like that was something that were different things, similar effect where it was like everyone else is like, oh my God, what do I do? And she was like, ah, I've seen things change before. It's all good.
Like for me, for example, I was part of the contact tracing team for positive cases of COVID. I was working like 16-hour days, and people were like, "How are you not affected by this?" And I'm just like, I can compact very, very well to the point where it's almost a detriment at this point. But like for me, I just used my alters, like the adult ones anyway, that were just like awareness of what my job was. It was just like, okay, I need 5 minutes. Can someone please just take over? And someone would, and I would just hide out in the supply closet for a little bit. But generally, it was me, but if something became too overwhelming, or if there was a positive or negative trigger for an alter, a switch would happen. Either it was pretty immediate within a few minutes, or it would take hours and sometimes days, which is a very alarming state to be in. But I was able to actually perform at a much higher standard than I did before the pandemic. And people were really amazed, and a lot of people like praised me for it. And I was just here sitting awkwardly, and I'm like, ah, it's a disorder. You shouldn't praise that, but cool, thank you. So.
That's like when I was younger, I had, well, I still have celiac disease and
Me too.
oh, you do? No way.
Yes.
We're the same age too, by the
Oh,
way.
the struggle's real.
Yeah. Wild. Yeah, so I don't know what your, discovery process was with it, but for me, I lost like 25 pounds over a couple of months, and obviously people are like, "Oh, wow, that's amazing." I'm like, "No, I'm dying. This is that's not good."
No, for me, it was just like I broke all four of my fingers on
Oh,
this hand.
wow.
And I was like, I didn't do anything except open a window. Like, what happened? I had
Oh,
osteoporosis. I had
man.
no minerals. And they were just like, something's not right here. And they tried like every test before they finally landed on celiac. So
Yeah.
they kept me awake and they just kind of froze me. And they took a piece of my intestine. And as I was watching it on the forceps, it was disintegrating. I'm like,
Yeah, that can't be good.
that's it. So, yeah.
Wow.
It's annoying because I experienced a celiac. So if I eat anything with wheat, rye, or barley, as you know, I get sick. My ulcers don't seem to get the memo. And they eat pasta. So I deal with the effects later. And they're just like, yeah, my stomach's a little upset. No biggie. And I'm just like, I'm dying.
Oh
What is
no,
happening?
that's awful. I was
It's
gonna
like the
ask,
weirdest
yeah.
self-harm that
So
they
it,
do, and I'm like,
yeah. So it's not like the vision then. Your body doesn't
no.
become not celiac. Oh
No, and I get
no.
more anxious, I get more depressed, I become a zombie. The brain
Yeah.
fog is just too real. It's just no.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, so I'm curious about the we hear a lot of different things about the Canadian healthcare system in the US. I think a lot of my fellow leftists kind of think it's perfect, but that's not the sense I'm getting lately. So
No.
when it
I
so
mean, it's
like
great if I'm in a car accident, like if we leave here and I get into a bus accident or a car accident, I can go to the hospital and not worry about hospital bills. Like,
yeah.
that's great.
Right. It's better than ours,
But
but that's not hard to
yeah,
do.
whereas, thousands of dollars. Like, I had COVID, for example. I
Oh,
got
really?
COVID at the grocery store because someone spat in my face. I got COVID. I was sick for 8 weeks. So when George Floyd and all the protests happened, I was actually very sick and I was feeling quite helpless because I couldn't be involved. That aside, I ended up in the hospital twice, so I didn't have to worry about being charged $1 million
Right.
for treatment.
That's good.
But basically, what your president got, that Walter Reed, is our norm. So,
Right.
with that said, dental's not covered. Okay, Nana, you need to stop calling me. Dental is not covered unless you're in our province. Jesus Christ. I'm so sorry. She's like 79 years old and very needy. Where was I? Oh, our healthcare is on a provincial and territorial level. So the federal
Okay.
government says, hey, you have X number of dollars, or in our case, millions of dollars, go forth and prosper.
Okay.
So in Ontario, if you're a minor, your dental is covered, but mental health supports generally are not. So those are always third party, which brings me to the back to the point of private practice. A lot of people that specialize in dissociative disorders work in private practice. They don't work in the public health system. And if they do, the wait list is 3 years long or longer.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's why I created DSOC, because right now, if you're looking for publicly funded therapeutic supports for a dissociative disorder, right now at one of the major hospitals in Toronto, it is a 3-year wait list. I've been on it. I signed on to it in 2017 and I'm still waiting. And there is an option to go private. However, it's very costly and my health insurance will not cover it. I currently work at less than 50% of where I used to work. Due to the pandemic and the fact that I'm also now back in school. So I went from being full-time to part-time and now part-time of that part-time,
Right.
so to speak,
Yeah.
and like just because of the pandemic, and which is fine. And I respect that. However, it makes things a little bit more complicated and a little bit more rough. And right now, the way it is set up in Canada, the only therapeutic supports that are generally covered are psychiatric. So it's like, so psychiatry is
Right.
usually who you see. And a lot of people in my community, in the wider dissociative community, we have a lot of trauma with the psychiatric system. So I created DSOC as an alternative path to getting support. But as a result, we're in, when I started DSOC, I started it in October of 2019, completely unaware of what 2020 had in store for us.
Right.
So we're severely underfunded right now, but the demand for us has actually increased because of the pandemic. So right now I'm going to the province of Ontario to have them basically cover us, like the basic operating costs, because we are lifelong psychiatric disabilities. There is no cure. We can only maintain it. We can only support it to the best of our abilities. Like, it's not like cancer where you go through these treatments and everything's great. Like, it's not like that at all. It's, you're disabled for life,
Right.
basically. But a lot of disability supports don't recognize psychiatric disabilities as valid disabilities.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the same problem with the chronic pain stuff.
What state are you in?
At the time I was in Pennsylvania, and that's when I was like really having a hard time working at any
Yeah.
major capacity. Yeah, I couldn't get unemployment, I couldn't get disability. It was just like, all right, I don't know what I'm going to do. But now I'm in Massachusetts, which is
Okay. A
much
little bit
better.
better.
Yeah, I think we're pro this is probably the best state in the US for healthcare. Yeah,
Okay.
oh, I was going to ask if Canada has any kind of like Medicaid or something, because I think that's why it's great here, because like I don't make
We
enough
have
money and
Medicaid.
they
We also just call it universal health care.
Right. Okay.
So every province has a health plan, and they call it either Medicare or Medicaid, like whatever, right? If you're on welfare or any other social services supports, sometimes you can get mental health coverage to a point. Sometimes your dental is covered, but it's not great. And you really have to provide a lot of evidence to support this claim, right? So a lot of people just don't go through it.
Right.
With in Ontario, we have the Ontario Support Program or ODSP, and it's not great.
Yeah.
It's capped out at like $1,200. It's super invasive. They're super nosy. You cannot be in a relationship while receiving ODSP, for example. No, because if you're living with your partner, so let's just say hypothetically, you and I were in a relationship and I was on ODSP. As soon as ODSP finds out that you and I are living together, they will cut off my funding.
Really?
Yeah, they need your information, my information, my roommate's information, if I had one. It's just,
Wow.
it's a pain in the
What
ass.
if you're
And
married?
it's super invasive. And a lot of people just go off ODSP because they want to have relationships in life. And if you're
Right.
married,
Oh, you can't.
you get
Yeah.
jack.
Yeah.
So marriage equality, my ass.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, it just it
We
sounds
have
like,
problems,
oh, for
okay?
sure. Yeah, I it sounds like, yeah, at a very basic level, there's it's a little more pulled together, but it's just a bloated, overcomplicated system like we have here.
In comparison to the US, Canada is a utopia
Sure.
in
It's
that aspect alone. In terms of healthcare, Canada is a utopia. But if we look at all social detriments to health, Canada and the US are kind of the same.
Right.
We have a lot of racism here, a lot, to the point where today the RCMP were actually told if you wear a badge with a thin blue line on it, you got to take it off. And the RCMP unions are fighting back.
My God. Yes. Well,
Yeah.
at least they push back against that shit, against the blue line shit.
The RCMP do not have a great history when it comes to policing in Canada.
Yeah.
They tend to be in more rural areas, but people that live in rural areas tend to be Indigenous and they're heavily policed.
Yeah.
The RCMP and social workers, my poor career, has a very complicit history with the 60 Scoop, the residential school system, and just basic genocide and cultural genocide of Indigenous peoples in Canada.
Yeah, I've heard about some of that.
Yeah, so when I started DSOC, as you mentioned to me in your email, you spoke to AMU,
Yeah.
the AMU system. Now, AMU system and I, we're besties. We're great, but AMU system is Indigenous,
Okay.
and I am not. But I made it part of my mandate that we would be very cooperative and collaborative with the decolonization process that's happening.
Yeah.
And as a result, we reject traditional psychiatric institutions because they are rooted in white supremacy, in colonialism, and genocide.
Yeah.
And we're not about that because we also recognize that these things also contributed to the prevalences of dissociative disorders in the Canadian population.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And so what are some of the goals and some of the practices of DSOC that work towards that goal?
Right now, we're just an online advocacy group due to the lack of funds,
Yeah.
but we were very, very outspoken when Indigenous people, shortly after, well, the same week as George Floyd, when George Floyd died, we also had two Indigenous people, if I remember correctly, die in the same week as a result of wellness checks. So we were very outspoken. We were one of the few mental health organizations to actually say something.
Yeah.
So when Ijaz Shordi, an Arab man, if I remember correctly, died in Brampton, the police just opened fire on him. They went up to his balcony, got onto the balcony, kicked open the door, and just opened fire. He was a man with schizophrenia, and the Schizophrenia Society of Canada said nothing.
Well, so wait. So what was I don't know if I missed something. What happened here? They were just doing a wellness check, but
They did a
attacked
wellness
this
check.
guy?
This man did not speak a lot of English, and his
Okay.
family was like, just let us in there and we will calm him down because he doesn't speak English.
Okay.
He was a schizophrenia, a paranoid schizophrenic who was apparently non-compliant, and meaning that he wasn't taking his medication.
Right.
So the family did what they were told. If your family member is in crisis and you can't do anything safely, call the police.
Right.
Now, the police is not really a good avenue for anyone with a wellness issue, right?
Right.
But that is currently the system. You call 911, they send the police. In this case, they knew he was schizophrenic. The family told the police, four police officers, if I remember correctly, three or four, that he was schizophrenic. Like, let us in, we can calm him down. You can make sure everything's kosher. Da 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 da. No, what they did is they took a ladder, went up the ladder onto his balcony, kicked open the door, and didn't scream at all once, like put the knife down or anything. The allegation is that he was holding a knife. Yeah, I'd be holding a knife too if four people were trying to come into my home via my balcony,
Right.
one, and they just opened fire. They just killed him. So as a result, there was an SIU investigation, which is the provincial like third party investigation into looking like shootings that involve police, but really it's just cops investigating cops.
Right.
And the police
Yeah.
officers didn't speak to the Special Investigations Unit. So as a result, that case was closed
Yeah.
with zero recourse, zero justice, and that family is still living in the apartment with bullet holes in the wall that they will have to pay for when they move out because it's considered damage.
Yeah. It's insane.
So I made it my mandate and I told my social media people to tweet about it. And they were like, I don't know what to tweet. And I was like, fine, I'll do it myself. And so I did it. And to this day, the Schizophrenia Society, which is a national mental health organization for psychosis and schizophrenia, has said nothing. And they were heavily involved with the recent, there was a, we have mental, like mental health acts in each province and territory. So in 2015, there was a revision to the Mental Health Act in Ontario, and the Schizophrenia Society was very much involved with that because a white man with schizophrenia was killed by police. But in this case, it was an Arab man, therefore not worthy of a tweet.
Yeah.
So, and just in that respect alone, we are different because we believe that mental health is political. Mm-hmm. It is political. It is a matter of life and death. We're not going to stay silent, and we're not going to be complicit in that silence. So in that way, we are different. And as a result, we don't get as much funding opportunities as much as we like as a result.
Yeah.
However, hopefully that changes as this cultural movement that we are in makes companies and just the general public realize that, like, we can't continue the way that we were going. It's not going to work. It has never worked. Abolish it. Let's find something new, so to speak. Basically put Black and Indigenous women in charge is where I was coming from. So my hope with DSOC is that we're completely self-funded or funded through the provinces and territories. And we offer therapeutic housing, legal supports, because people do lose their jobs through discrimination or just not understanding, like employers not understanding what accommodations are and what accommodations can be there. And a lot of people actually lose their kids because of their dissociative status. So we're going to have family and an employment law supports and just whatever kind of legal supports you may need. Basically, we're going to have to be classified as a psychiatric facility to really become the facility I want us to be. So I took a lot of inspiration from an HIV hospital here in Toronto called Casey House. They're a full-fledged hospital, but when you go inside it doesn't feel like a hospital. It feels like a home.
Right.
And basically, they have this entire floor that's dedicated to people that have left the hospital and maybe not quite well enough to go home and live independently. So like this is kind of like a temporary stay. So my goal is if you're in the psychiatric unit and you don't want to be there, but you need somewhere safe to be and home may not be that option yet, we have a bed for you.
Right.
That A, you're not incarcerated. You can go and come and go as you please. And you're supported and you're around people that actually get it. So there's that empathy that is also missing that's in the traditional psychiatric system.
Right.
And we don't call it psychiatric holds. We call them in residence. And the reason for that is because a lot of people in our community have childhood trauma. And a lot of that trauma happens in the home.
Yeah.
So our goal is to actually have a house where we can just send you. And or place you rather, not just send you, but like place you, and you have all the anemones of home and while breaking that cycle of what home means and just reconfiguring it. So it's like subtle deprogramming, so to speak. But it was something that I went through in several years ago. And it was probably the most beneficial thing that happened to me. And as I started talking to more and more people in the community, they were saying the same thing too. And I was like, well, let's make this a model. And basically we're calling it the Canadian model. So, because it's not recognized, there isn't an existing model that reflects what we want to do.
Right.
So basically we're flying blind and doing the best that we can.
Yeah. Well, a very like friendly approach like that is what I normally associate with Canada. So I think that is a good name.
Yes, we are so nice to a fault. Right. And we do apologize for everything.
For being
I think
so nice.
We all sat here watching the presidential debate and going, oh my God. And now the recent headline is that Trump doesn't want to engage in a virtual debate because he wants to infect Biden. Is
The dude is like completely unhinged now.
I'm scared for you guys.
I'm worried I'm gonna wake up and it's like, hey, he nuked Virginia or something. Like,
We're
dude.
like back in the early days of 2020 when like the biggest threat was maybe World War III.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he'll pick up that thread.
He just killed an Iranian general for funsies. And I'm just like, why?
It's so absurd.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But we are worried for you. We have almost started an underground railroad,
Oh
so
yeah.
to speak, to maybe possibly get people out before that becomes a whole Gilead situation, like Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
But we're very worried, especially for the multiple and plural communities.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Everyone is just terrified because a lot of people that identify as a plural or multiple tend to be LGBTQ affiliated,
Okay.
happen to be also marginalized racially or neurodivergence. So there's a lot of it at stake. And right now, there isn't really like a national platform for dissociative disorders in the States. And we decided in the early days of the pandemic that we were going to open something similar to DSOC in the US. And then the pandemic kind of happened. And then Trump went off his steroid rocker. We don't know what's happening, but
Yeah, we don't either.
hopefully we come up with something. It's just that we have to figure out how to do it because state versus federal is significantly different from provincial versus federal here.
Right.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Yeah. yeah, so are there any roadblocks that would come from, like, so even if you get to the psychiatric facility status that you need, if people are free to go, is that something that would be like cracked down on? They would be like, no, you have to keep them there. That's the whole thing. Or no.
No. We operate on the behalf of the province. It's kind of like how casinos operate on behalf of the province in Canada,
Oh.
significantly different from what it is in the US. Basically, our rules, they just pay the operating costs. Obviously, there will have to be some negotiation and like some compromises, but this is not something that we're going to compromise on. We will never incarcerate anybody for being in crisis. Why would we do that? That would actually
Right.
be
No, of
more
course.
harmful than beneficial.
Yeah.
So, like, I should also note that in like psychiatric institutions, depending on where you're sent in Canada, they also have rules that really limit how much you can leave the unit. And if they think that you're really, really high risk, you're already in solitary, so to speak. So, like, if you harm yourself or you're a threat to others, they isolate you. But if you're there because you, for example, God forbid, or heaven forbid, whatever thing you believe in, tried to complete suicide, and depending on how successful you might have been, or if you were just having thoughts, that will really limit where you go and how often you can leave the unit. Like you can roam the unit to a degree, but like leaving the unit, for example, to like go get a cup of coffee from Tim Hortons or Starbucks, wherever, is pretty limited. A lot of people actually develop smoking habits in order to get outside and just
Wow.
breathe in fresh air.
That's ironic.
It's not great,
No.
but if you're there because you've been formed, which is a process, a legal process where they're like, no, we've committed you to the psychiatric ward, the law is now involved, blah, blah, blah. If you're there for over 6 months, like that's really going to limit your
Yeah.
freedom, so to speak. To me, it's incarceration. If I can't go and come and go as I please, it's incarceration to me.
Right.
So, here, like, we're not going to limit you. It, like, for example, if we have a day program where we feed you a hot meal for lunch and you get to talk to other people and socialize and not be socially isolated, great, fine. And if you have somebody that's upstairs and they want to come downstairs to like talk to a friend, we're not going to limit that.
Right.
If you want to go, to the store to pick up cigarettes or, some candy or whatever you need that we don't supply already, we're not going to limit that. But if you suddenly go missing, we're obviously going to be very concerned. But you have free will.
Right.
And
Yeah.
that is just how I feel, because my own personal experiences being on the psych ward, it really didn't help me. It just made me not want to go back.
Right.
It just scared me into compliance and being good
Yeah.
and being sane. So how is that beneficial to anybody?
Right. Yeah, that's it's a good point, 'cause I think yeah, if you are helping people and you're treating them with respect and that's what they need and that's what they want, why, like, where are they gonna go? That
I
sounds.
know of some psychiatric units that they'll give you bus tokens
Yeah.
to go come and go as you please, but you're limited by how many tokens. Usually they give you one to go somewhere and one to come back. And if you don't come back by a certain time, they send the cops on you anyway. So like,
That's wild.
it's bizarre. It's not great. It's not a system that's currently working.
Right.
And they tout that it's working, and I'm like, it's really not.
Right.
There has to be a better alternative. Not to mention, Indigenous sovereignty has to be respected. So, as a result, we don't want to use the colonial white supremacist patriarchal mental health system on an Indigenous person. Like, that's not going to work. So, basically, what my board members and I have come up with is basically a new psychiatric system that is survivor-centric, trauma-informed, and social justice-based.
Yeah, well, that sounds good to me. And is this something people can donate to? Can they help out?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right now we have a GoFundMe. If you just click the donate button on our website, it will take you there. We also have a Patreon because we recently started a YouTube and podcast. So
Oh,
the
really?
organizational Patreon has goals currently, which are to hire a grant writer and a French translator and an Indigenous language translator.
Okay.
We haven't figured out which Indigenous language yet, but it's down to either can't talk. The three most commonly Indigenous languages, which are Cree, Inuktitut, which is the language of the north of the Inuit, and the Ojibwe. I'm so sorry, I just butchered that. Which are the most commonly spoken Indigenous languages. We just have to choose one
Yeah. Okay.
and just go with it. But our goal is to have all Indigenous languages reflected. So all content, our website, services, everything in an Indigenous language, especially if we're in a community where we've been invited to and to like basically set up shop with the Indigenous community's consent, so to speak, which we will never do unless we are explicitly invited. So if an Indigenous community invites us there and said we need your help, basically, blah, 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 we will provide the funding costs. But everyone that works in that facility is Indigenous
Okay.
and speaks
Yeah.
the Indigenous language. So that is how we are decolonizing. And also, I've kind of made it a rule that white people are going to be the minority in DSOC for very obvious reasons, because a lot of our clientele are racially marginalized.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds great. Unfortunately, I have to go because I have another
No worries.
interview, but this was a fascinating talk, and
Yeah,
I think
Thank you.
you're doing great work, and it's a good thing for people to hear about. So,
Oh, thanks. I love talking about it, so I could go on for hours,
good.
but I recognize that you have to go somewhere.
All right, cool. It was good to meet you.
It was nice meeting you too. I hope you have a good day.
Right, see ya.
Bye.
That was my interview with Bethany. You can follow the DSC on Twitter at dissociatedinca and donate to them on Patreon. You can follow me on Twitter at @Joe_Messina and Instagram at @Joe_Messina1, Facebook.com/radicalizeme. And you can donate to the show or leave us a message at anchor.fm/radicalizeme. Google search mutual aid in your city and get involved. It's easy to do if you have a little time. And it's how we start to build our own power outside of institutional structures. This week, in addition to Bethany's organization, the cause that I want to feature is the Philadelphia Community Bail Fund. It already seems like a long time ago, but there was a big, another big protest and riot in Philadelphia following, you know, another one of these police fucking killings. So I'm sure that people are still dealing with the ramifications, and that community bail fund could use a little help right now. And that's it. Biden won. Fuck Trump. Do anarchy. Later.